Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by CSpire. Power your home or business with CSpire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/CSpire. CSpire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. Hello. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Rhino.
Howdy, howdy.
All right, I apologize for crashing my mouse into the mic boom here.
Hi-ya!
Sorry about that, folks. That'll wake you up, although you're still probably a bit woozy with a daylight saving time. I love it. I enjoy it. I'm ready for it, man. I love the extra daylight in the evening time.
You know, I hate one aspect of it.
Okay.
The weekend is 1 hour shorter.
Well, okay. That's true.
I feel like I got shorted a little bit this last weekend.
Yeah.
I expect my full amount, my full allotted 48 hours of weekend. Only got 47 this time around.
Oh, well, you'll get it back in the fall, as they say. Dang it. Is it just me, or does there appear to be too much complaining about that?
I feel like the complaining is at least somewhat understandable at this point in the time change.
All right.
Compared to in the fall, I never understand complaining about fallback. You literally got an extra hour in your weekend. You got an extra hour of sleep. The clock fell backwards. You got more time.
Yeah.
And then what the dude on the Twilight Zone wanted? More time. But spring forward, losing that hour, if you are just a go-getter and you have every single hour of every day scheduled with something getting done productively, then I can see some moaning and groaning if you lose a whole hour.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I just feel like that the time that people spend grousing about it, just be done with it and move on. Not that big a deal. I mean, have you never traveled between time zones like on an airplane?
Believe it or not, there are many people that have not.
I guess you're right. And I don't mean to be condescending in that fashion, but those of us who have, you're accustomed to that, especially if it's a coast-to-coast deal. It doesn't matter which way you go. Now, what'll really mess you up is going to Hawaii back and forth. Oh, my gosh. That's really a crazy deal. But that's just the way the old body works, I reckon. I also think if you travel between time zones on a frequent basis, it doesn't jar you as much as it does when it just, you know, pops up randomly. You're all about the way your body stuff. I don't know that we totally understand. I'm sure there are some scientists out there that'll tell you they completely understand all that stuff, and they've got that figured out down to the physiological level.
There are some scientific, or there is some scientific understanding of the circadian rhythm and exposure to light and how that impacts your ability to sleep on average. But the one thing that science runs into a wall in is the fact that not everybody's the same. You can only really apply averages. You can never find a one size fits all.
Yeah.
So you could have scientific studies showing it's statistically significant that You do not expose yourself to bright light, white light, blue light, whatever kind of light it is that they say you shouldn't expose yourself to, or you're going to have a hard time sleeping. Inevitably, you're going to find at least some people out there that could just be staring at that color light and fall asleep at the drop of a hat.
Yeah,
so it's just one of those things. It's the human body.
Yeah.
We can get averages. We can get a good generalization, but we can't find the one size fits all.
I totally agree. Now, Mr. Trump, you recall, before the election, went out to social media and said he wanted to eliminate daylight saving time. And there are folks that come down on, as you know, different sides of that particular issue. And I think they're... are a lot of people that would say, let's just don't change the clock at all. Then the question is, okay, then which time should we retain? And he had suggested, let's stay on standard time. However, this weekend, he pivoted. When he was asked directly that question, given that this was the weekend to change the clocks, he said, well, it's a 50-50 deal. So he kind of put it to bed right there. It really said nothing further about it. Now, the U.S. Senate, I believe in 2022, did pass Senator Marco Rubio's bill, which would essentially implement daylight saving time year-round, called the Sunshine Act 2022. Passed overwhelmingly, if not unanimously, as I recall. And then it ran into some roadblocks, as they say, in the House and went nowhere. 27 or 28 states have bills in place that would keep their state on daylight saving time year-round should the Congress pass law that would enable them to make that decision. Right now, really can't without congressional approval. And how about this? An aircraft company... Boom Supersonic. They have created an airplane that can break the sound barrier without generating a sonic boom. That's always been a holdback there. This is a commercial aviation company, by the way. This is not a company that makes military aircraft, which can and do. But they're restricted, right, Rhino, where they can do that. Now, I got to tell you, guys, I remember as a kid, Hawkins Field over in Jackson used to do some military training operations, and it seemed like it was always Sunday morning before we headed off to church. You'd hear the sonic boom, and it would rattle the dang windows in our little bitty house over there in West Jackson. And I want to say at some, this was in the 60s, and I want to say at some point that was banned. Where you can fly supersonic and generate a boom. You're shaking your head. I think I got that right.
Yeah, huh? I don't remember exactly when it happened, but I have memories of early childhood. My parents, or mainly my mom, complaining about being woken up by the sonic boom. I don't remember waking up to it, but she complained about it. And I remember at some point, there were no more complaints. So something changed.
Something changed. But the cool thing is this company, Boom Supersonic, they call their plane Sonic Boomless. And they have entitled it the XB-1. And you can go out and look at the images of this particular plane. It's still extremely expensive.
Oh, yeah.
But we're headed there. I heard an interview, fascinating, with the CEO this morning. And it says that we're paving the way, he says, for coast-to-coast flights up to 50% faster, like 3 hours coast-to-coast. By the way, speed at sea level is 761 miles per hour when you're pushing air out of the way, and that creates the pressure, which generates the waves, sound waves, if you will. So this is pretty cool, though. It's just neat to see this sort of technology. I don't really understand how you can push air and not create a boom. Is it, maybe it's in the design of the aircraft?
Yeah, it's partially in, from what I understand, because I watched a video where they had graphics explaining how it worked. And what's the old saying, that any sufficiently advanced science appears like magic to the uninitiated?
Okay.
It's because, one, the shape of the airplane... Two, the exact speeds that they're flying, and three, it's the elevation. when you combine those three variables in a very certain way, the wave they're pushing from the plane can cancel out the wave that would be traveling. So it's
all right.
I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this. It's kind of like if you had a fan, like a box fan and a box fan, and you put them together, you can find that happy medium where you could sit a beach ball in between them and it'll kind of float.
Yeah.
That convergence.
Okay.
They found a convergence with the booms to where they can make them cross and it cancels out that sonic boom that can be heard
really
from the
cool.
ground. You still have the sonic boom at a certain elevation and above. It just keeps it from hitting the ground and impacting populated areas.
Makes sense. Well, now, I heard this morning him say 3.5 hours, but I'm reading this report here that says that they expect that they can produce planes that will cruise at Mach 1.7 or 1,300 miles per hour. 750 is Mach. That would travel you from New York to Los Angeles in less than 2 hours. Whew. That's incredible. Sign me up for that. We've got Robert Johnson. He's a member of the Mississippi House of Representatives. He serves as the minority leader. He's coming on at 11:05. We're in the Element Well studio. This segment of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Okay, don't check your 401k plans today, folks. You ain't gonna like what you see. Well, that is because there's a great deal of uncertainty among the investment community, and I know you guys probably get tired of me saying it, but it's faith, confidence, and certainty. That's what drives investment, business formation and expansion, job creation. Right now, we don't have any. It's the Mr. Miyagi, tariffs on, tariffs off. We're back to that again. But more importantly, yesterday, the president did a fantastic interview with Fox Business's Maria Bartiromo. And she did a great job, by the way. Wouldn't that be cool, Rhino, to sit face-to-face like that and interview the president of the United States for an hour? What a privilege. What an honor that is. I guess you could say depending on the president. Can you imagine Joe Biden doing an hour interview? I don't think he could make honestly. That'd be tough. What about Kamala?
It might take an hour. It might be about 40 minutes of Mr. President. Mr. President, we need you to sit back down over here. Mr. President, could you leave the curtains alone? Mr. President, put that down, Mr. President. Please, Mr. President, could you just sit back over here?
Maybe you could.
We've got an interview to conduct, Mr. President.
Maybe you could bribe him with ice cream.
That's what eventually you'd have to do. Mr. President, we got a double chocolate snow cone ice cream here. Come on back over here.
So the one thing you cannot deny, right, is that this president does not shy away from the press. In fact, I would say he relishes in it. I mean, he enjoys talking to the press, and he does have command of a broad spectrum of subject matter. You can hit him, and it doesn't appear, and I don't know this for sure. I mean, you would think that there'd be some behind-the-scenes understanding and prepping of the line of questioning. I think that's probably true, but it's also fair to say that in this particular interview, Maria Bartiromo, she didn't dance around. She didn't ask these questions that are designed to make the interviewee, the president in this case, look good or not have to think too hard about the answers, which is what we got in the last 4 years. And that's not the case here. And so I appreciate her questions.
Wait, so you mean she didn't ask Donald Trump what are three things sitting on your nightstand right now? And Donald Trump didn't have a hard time answering it?
Great example. Yeah. Not that I heard in the interview, the hour-long affair. So he was asked about the tariffs and, of course, the effect that's having on the markets, which has been the case for the last couple of weeks. They've all given up lots of ground. In fact, the S&P since February 19th has shed $3 trillion of market cap. That's a bunch. And that's reflected in your investments, no doubt about it. And what he said was that we have to endure some pain. I'm paraphrasing a bit. I think he called it a disturbance, some turbulence, in order to right the ship. Yeah, there could be some disturbance, a little bit of disturbance. That's what he said Friday in his Tuesday speech to Congress. He defended his agenda, of course. In his speech, he said disruptions. So he's a firm believer in the use of tariffs as a tool to level the trading playing field. And there's no doubt that this country, as he says, has been ripped off by our trading partners. And keep in mind, it's the importers who pay tariffs. It's American importers that pay tariffs on goods that cross the border inbound to the country. And it's foreign entities who pay tariffs on American goods that are exported by America into those countries. Nonetheless, they get passed on in the cost cycle somewhere, somehow. Sometimes companies will absorb them because in passing them on, their products become unmarketable. Then that's a problem, of course. But he's a big believer and fan of him. He said he's going to make us rich. That his tariff policies are going to make us wealthy. And I don't think there's any question, though, that he understands and recognizes there's going to be short-term pain. Well, that's what we're enduring right now, and I think that's going to continue for a while. When asked about a recession in the offing, he wouldn't rule it out. He didn't say that, no, absolutely, we won't enter a recession. Honestly, I'm not sure that we're not headed for one. Now, his Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick, he was over there on Meet the Press on Sunday, and he said absolutely not. There's no indications that we are headed for a recession, and he does not expect one. In fact, what he said was that Mr. Trump's policies are going to push the price of fuel down, and because we're going to increase supply, we're already seeing a bit of a decline of the price per barrel of crude oil. That's largely driven by OPEC's increase in production. And China's really struggling financially, right, economically. They don't want you to know that, but there are a lot of inside reports that do indicate China is enduring some economic contraction. And you've got Europe that's, I don't want to say in a tailspin, but you're seeing Europe struggle financially. And I think, honestly, that's because all these social programs and this more emphasis on leisure time and what the government can do for you than working your butt off to produce.
Oh, it doesn't help
catching
that
up.
The majority of European nations have imported millions of immigrants that do not align with their typical belief system as well.
What a dumb policy that was. It really was.
But that's costing them money, too, in their economies, because they're propping those people up with those social systems, and those people are providing little, if any, support to the economy themselves.
I think that's absolutely the case. Now, you do have to acknowledge that the president has pivoted somewhat in his focus on the stock markets. He focused on that and touted gains quite a bit. In fact, before he was elected, when the market was was rising, he said it was the Trump trade, that he thought it was because he was looking good in the polls and was likely to get elected. Now, basically, he says that Wall Street, he doesn't say it's inconsequential, but doesn't really pay that much attention to it anymore. And he said he's more concerned about riding the ship with respect to trade imbalance as far as tariffs are concerned. He also said that we're too short-term. He's right about that. And with respect to markets are focused on the next quarter. And China, of course, is their philosophy is more about the long-term. And he pointed that out in his discussion with Maria Bartiromo. He said, you can't really watch the stock market. If you look at China, they have a 100-year perspective. Now, that's probably not too comforting to folks that are about to retire or who are retired and want to see their investments grow in value. And they don't have 100 years left, needless to say. But he defended his tariff policy. He said, quote, they are going to be the greatest thing we've ever done as a country. And a reporter who said, when asked about a recession, he said, of course you hesitate. Who knows? He then repeated his assertion that tariffs would make the country rich. And what he means by that is that his expectation is that the tariffs would result in lots of reshoring of manufacturing into this country, and that in doing so, jobs would be created, economic activity inside our borders. Those people also pay taxes, of course, you know, according to the Democrats in this country, that's never enough. If they were up to them, they'd confiscate every penny of profit every corporation makes without any clue of the deleterious effect of that.
And they'd still run out of that
no doubt.
Be unhappy.
That's absolutely true.
Because they're worthless.
No doubt about that. They are in disarray, to say the least, the Democrats are, which I...
They deserve every bit of it.
I welcome. Well, we're coming right back with more in the Element Well studio. Don't forget, Robert Johnson from the Mississippi House joins us at 11:05.
Yeah, do the mess around. Yeah, do the mess around. Everybody's doing the mess around.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Element Well Studio, the NASDAQ now down 518. It was down over 600 points today. The 10-year is falling, though, Rhino, and this is just indicative of a sluggish economy. And that's also because investors are pulling their money out of equities and into treasuries, U.S. treasuries. The Dow still down, let's see, as well, and crude oil is falling. It's down to $66. The volatility index off the chart. It's just because of so much concern. Yeah, the Dow down now 340. That's actually pulled back from its lows of the day. What about the old funny money there, Rhino?
It's kind of fallen off a cliff.
Yeah.
And last I checked, it was south of 80. Let's see what it's at this point.
I'm going to predict it's going lower, much lower.
It's back up above 80. 80,953. It got as low as 79,142 this morning.
That's down, what, about 30% the last month, 6 weeks? When did we hit the...
Last month, it's down 17%.
Okay. For the last month?
Yeah.
Okay. But off the high, what, didn't we hit about 105
the highest it went was back in January. It got up to 109, almost 110, yeah.
Okay, so we're down 30,000, which is not quite 30% from the high, but pretty close. It just volatility. And the other thing is this, they had a big crypto meeting, and now we're talking about setting up a crypto reserve at the federal government. And I think that disappointed, is it? Would that be fair to say, Rhino, that what's being planned is really just taking some of the recovered crypto payments in these fraud schemes is how we're going to fund that. And that stopped a little short, I think, of what the crypto world expected.
Yeah, because the initial plan for the strategic reserve would include a major first purchase to help establish the reserve, which would have sent prices skyrocketing, and then continuing purchases at scale.
Yep, I agree. On the daylight saving time issue, JD in Oxford says self-employed people struggle because it is hard to stop working when the sun is high and daylight is available. Not everyone can walk away from work at a certain time. They are based on production and getting to next job when it gets dark at 5 o'clock. It's easier. And so I take a different stance on that, JD. I say that's a good thing that I can work longer. You're right, though. I fully agree. Self-employed people, having been one myself, no doubt. You tend to stay longer than everybody else. That's what you signed up for, and I know you realize that as well. But I would say that's a good thing in that, okay, I can work longer and still have some daylight when I get home to do some things with light. So it just depends on your perspective. One thing's for clear about this issue, Rhino, there ain't no broad consensus. That's what's clear. It's not an 80-20 deal like such as the
dudes in dresses
playing against the girls. That's an 80-20 deal. That's just so dang common sense. It's not even funny. It's just mesmerizing to me that the Democrats still see fit to protect that teeny tiny infinitesimal sliver of the population while harming others. It's incredible. But I
haven't seen anybody propose it in America, and I don't think our population or geography would allow it. But there was a proposal years ago in Japan that involves technology that's been around for a couple decades now, especially in Japan. It's been adopted more widely around the world. But basically, what's the point in individualized need for spring forward and fall back and all this kind of stuff if we have the technology to give you perfectly accurate time based on where you are geographically at any one point in time?
That's true. In fact, I'm having to rely on my phone for the time today because the battery in my watch has quit and it still says it's 8:20. So got to go get that
fixed. It didn't pass in Japan because it was complex and complicated, so I can't imagine anybody would even suggest it in America, but we do have the technology available to where you could have high noon be when the sun is directly above you, and everybody's clock would be slightly different, but everybody could also be within a window.
Well, the original timepieces, right? That's the way they work. Ben from Madison says, the markets are hurting today. I've been getting killed the last few weeks. Hopefully we can string a few weeks of stable growth in the near future. Here's what I think, and I said this on my social media today. I think the president is, he's no doubt, he's fully committed to his tariff policies. Said it's the most beautiful word in the dictionary and that it's going to make us all rich. I wouldn't hold my breath for the latter there. But I understand what he's saying. If he's successful, so there's two things driving markets, Ben, in my view. One is the uncertainty about the tariffs. Tariff on, tariff off. The other thing is the tax cuts. So don't forget Friday, we run out of money again, and it looks like we got yet another kick the can down the road, continuing resolution stage to be passed. And that could be a bit difficult because guess what? In the old Senate, as we've talked about so many times, got to have 60 votes, meaning you got to have some Democrats support this proposal, Otherwise, government shutdown. Now, their risk is, if all the Republicans in that Senate, or most sufficient number, support it, or the majority of the caucus there, but the Democrats don't get enough to push it over the 60 threshold, I would submit, Rhino, that most Americans would blame the Democrats in that case. That's a little different situation. And that wouldn't bode well for them. The pain that would inflict would be attributed to them. So that's driving Mark. That and tariffs are what's got the market spooked, no doubt. They're not confident we're going to get the Trump tax cuts extended. And oh my gosh, have the leftists come up with just a myriad of talking points in opposition to it. Now to the point where they're saying that the wealthy in this country are stealing. Let me repeat, stealing from the lower income strata in this country because they get to keep more of the money they legitimately earn. I hate that narrative so much. I really do. It's so misguided. And it's as the great Thomas Sowell said, why is it greedy to want to keep your own money but not greedy to want to get somebody else's money? He put that in such great simple terms and perspective, and they're going crazy about it. So the markets are concerned that Washington won't get its act together and extend the Trump tax cuts, and you couple that with the tariffs. Now, here's what I think. If we somehow emerge and you start seeing in this tariff war, because we're in a tariff war right now. He's declared a tariff war. If you start seeing the other countries, China, Canada, Europe, Mexico, you start seeing them pare back those tariffs they charge on American goods. And as well, remember what Mr. Trump said, that he expects them to take a stronger stance on stemming the tide of fentanyl coming into this country. And you've seen some recent reports that deaths are down. You seen that? And you have to believe that's because there's less of it coming into the country because, as you well know, some of it clearly is people get addicted to it and they end up killing themselves. But there's a lot of people that take this stuff unsuspecting, especially our young people. They think they're ingesting something else. Next thing you know, unfortunately, they perish because it had fentanyl laced in it. And it just takes, as you know, a teeny tiny amount of it. And so we're seeing the deaths actually be reduced somewhat. So maybe that means that Canada, Mexico are doing better at stopping the flow. But if we see that, if we see them start cutting back on their tariffs on our goods and we get the Trump tax cuts, I honestly believe we'll see the market soar. S-O-A-R, by the way, we'll see that happen in response because that's certainty. Great, got the tax cuts. Looks like this trade war is not going to last for decades. And all of that would bode well, I believe, for the economy. And when that happens, of course, that's good for the markets. That's where I think we're headed. There's a lot of talk about in the last couple of days. I know our own Ricky Matthews on the Ricky Matthews Show Facebook site posted a very long discussion about loss of manufacturing and manufacturing jobs in this country. It's been going on for a few decades, especially in the wake of NAFTA. He's right on that, no doubt. However, I got some other thoughts about the manufacturing sector and maybe we should really think through what that means as far as reshoring much of that manufacturing into the United States. Otis Redding bumping us out of this segment. Coming right back.
The mammy's got a brand new bed.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays from the Element Well Studio. John in Pontotoc says gold. Well, there's still some, I guess I should say, some reignited discussion about returning to the gold standard and having gold.
Or was he just asking about the price?
Oh, the price of gold, I just saw it. Looked like it's down. Silver is too. I apologize.
What's on the day, it's down a couple bucks.
Yeah.
It's up 10 bucks for the last 5 days. Last month, it's down 1%.
Yeah.
Pretty flat.
There's been some discussion of using gold. Is it Utah, I think, Rhino? Have you seen this announcement? This is fascinating. I'm glad John sent that in because it reminded me of the story I caught over the weekend, using gold to pay its vendors. Now, gotta remember, Utah is one of those states that's flush with gold. They're blessed with rich deposits of the mineral. And basically what they're saying is this would protect their vendors against inflation. You seeing that? It's pretty interesting. Hadn't thought about that. In addition, we talked earlier about the federal government setting up this strategic crypto reserve. Representative Byron Donalds, he's from the great state of Florida and has announced his candidacy for governor of the Sunshine State. He's talking about setting up a strategic reserve of crypto in Florida. Just a mixed, you know, a position in the state's overall portfolio. You know what he talked about? When asked, well, the question by the interviewer, I can't remember who it was, well, it's kind of volatile. You know, these assets can move up and down. And he's so right. He said, well, yeah, we have investments in a lot of assets, our state treasury, our state retirement system, just as is the case in Mississippi. They're all subject to market dynamics. Crypto's no different in that respect. And does it have a place in a portfolio? I'd say, yeah. I mean, it's an asset class now. One of the things, Rhino, that has caused it to decrease, talking about crypto, Bitcoin specifically, is the tax treatment of it. They're still in flux. We really hadn't figured out how that should be handled. And that's, I think once that gets settled, that would be a boost, honestly, to the asset. Jason in Starkville says, copper's the highest I've ever seen. I think timber, you can expect that to go up. The tariffs are playing a role in that. Ben from Madison, the fact that we import so much stuff is a sign of how wealthy we are as a nation, if you ask me. Manufacturing goods here is too expensive. If you bring it back here, then consumers will be paying more for everyday items. Ben, I hear you, and I'm going to take, if you'd have said this 2-3 years ago, I'd have said 100% right. And I'm going to say that I've had a change in that respect, and here's why. If, in fact, Rhino, if we migrate much of the manufacturing currently being done in China, in Mexico, for example, where a lot happens as far as manufacturing of goods that are imported into this country that we all buy. And I hear a lot of people say, well, buy American. I think what they probably don't realize, let's take American autos. Well, they're made in many of them in Mexico and in Canada. You heard Mike McCormick, president of Farm Bureau Federation, right here in our building, when he was on a couple of weeks ago, talking about, yeah, American-made farm implements import lots of the components. And they go back and forth sometimes and get tariffed up. But here's what I was going to say, Ben. The next generation, the next wave of manufacturing, it's going to be totally automated. And this idea that we're going to bring these manufacturing facilities back to this country and all the jobs that we lost 30 years ago are going to come back, I don't think it's remotely close to being true. In fact, I think it's quite the opposite. And where I think we would win here, Ben, is that these new factories, totally automated, as I believe they will be, including robots and all sorts of other advanced manufacturing technology, which will dramatically reduce the amount of labor required to make stuff in the modern factories, is likely to push the cost of manufacturing down because labor is such a huge part of that. And I think you're right, Ben, in that the average American is not going to want to pay a higher price on what they buy just because it's made in the country. A lot of people just flat out can't. They can't bear that, and the market won't bear that. But these manufacturers know, we move it back to the U.S., we can't do it at a price point that's higher than what we're currently doing, even with tariffs. And so they're looking at new technology, these new generation of plants, other than the ones they built 25 years ago in China and Mexico. We're talking a whole new ball game. We're talking the bag phone versus the iPhone type from a technology perspective. Ben says labor unions won't go for that. So are we going to go, are we going to stand up to the unions? I pray so, Ben. I pray that these manufacturers can say, take a hike, unions. We don't need your dang labor. And you're right, Ben, in that, remember the longshoremen who included their contract with their employer? No automation. You got to have people do that, and you got to pay us, three of us, to mark something down on a dang clipboard. Remember when we found that? This is the way to bust that syndicate up, honestly. We're stepping aside for Fox News and Super Talk News. It's Representative Robert Johnson on the other side. We're in the Element Well studio.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher. And now, another hour of the talk that keeps Mississippi talking. Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Begin your transition now.
Now on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's hour two of Middays from the Element Well studio. Don't forget, it's Mondays. Therefore, we have a short show for you today. Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors, comes your way at 12:05. But right now, it's Robert Johnson. He's a member of the Mississippi House of Representatives, serves District 94, which includes Adams, Franklin, and Jefferson counties. He's the vice chair of the House State Affairs Committee. But more importantly, he is the minority leader in the Mississippi House. Representative Johnson, always good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Gerard. Good to be here.
Yes, sir. So share with us your perspective on the 2025 legislative session. What do you think about it thus far? Of course, you guys are just about done with your business.
Yeah, we are. So far, you know, it's been sort of nip and tuck, back and forth. There's a lot of wrangling going on over the two versions of the Senate version of the tax bill and the House version of the tax bill. That's at a standstill. The sports gaming issue is sort of at a standstill. And then you got, you know, the public education issue, school choice. I think it's done, but there is some language in a bill that's in the House, a Senate bill that issue may try to find life again.
Where do you stand on that, on the issue of school choice, Representative Johnson?
Well, I'm opposed to it, and I'm opposed to it primarily because I've my mother was a former school teacher, principal, and superintendent, and so there's a certain affinity and understanding about public education that I have. And I also, you know, I'm old enough to grow up in an era where most of the private schools in this state were established in order as a pushback against desegregation. Hmm. And so I think we need to go to a point where we actually look at what public schools need. And I've had some people say, well, you know, a child should not have to suffer on the poor school system if he can choose where he can go. But, you know, we got to look at the economic part of that. Somebody said that we could work on let the money follow the child. If that happens, then you're only talking about $600 to $800 for a poor kid in Jefferson County. Where is that money going to follow him? Because he's not going to have money to do anything else. I just think we need to have a refocus on public education, making sure that we take care of the infrastructure needs in our schools. Look, we have gotten so that politics and governing has gotten to be gimmicky. And so we have gotten away from the basics: public education, public health, public safety, and public infrastructure. If we just come to work in January and make sure those things are fortified and working efficiently, then we can talk about some other things. But we have not done a very good job of taking care of those four basic things that I think people actually send us here to take care of.
So as you're well aware, last year the public school funding formula was overhauled. Are you pleased with that new methodology, or do you think that needs some more work?
Well, I think it needs some more work, and I'm not displeased with it. I think the jury is still out on it. It's going to be, unlike the adequate education plan that locks in a formula and you either meet it or you don't, this one is you know, sort of fluctuated. It gives the legislature and the governing bodies in the state a little bit more cover, because they can say, yes, we funded education at the level that the money suggested we can fund it at. That doesn't mean that we're doing it in a manner that takes care of everything we need to take care of, but at least we are saying that we know we have some parameters we have to meet, except that target moves. And so some schools that, in the way the formula was set up last year, we're going to get a lot more money. Depending on what our budget looks like, depending on what we have to work with, that money could go down. That didn't happen in the adequate education plan. Your obligation remained constant. And so the jury is still out on it. Let me say this. I believe that the people that are the leaders in education in our legislature care about education. So I don't think they adopted a formula to hurt education. I think they believe in it, and I think that to the extent that it is not doing its job, those same leaders will come back to the board and make sure we get it right.
Do you think, Representative Johnson, that part of the problem of the low-performing districts is that they need more money? Is money the answer here?
Gerard, you are a much better businessman than I am. You proved that. And you know that in order to make something work, you have to invest. You have to put something into it. I'm not saying you throw money at it. I'm not saying you just waste money at it. But, you know, if you have school, you know, the philosophy behind public education when it was established in the early 20s was that you should not be penalized as a child because you live in an area that's poor. That no matter what your family or your community's, you know, income is, every child should be entitled to an education that will give them an opportunity to pull themselves up. And so I think there are areas in this state that we haven't made the requisite amount of investment in terms of economic development or infrastructure in order to increase their tax base. And I think that's the state's job. Where we've fallen short, we don't necessarily owe it to the whole community, but you owe it to the children. And so, yeah, a lot of it is money.
What about the idea of open enrollment, portability? You know, Representative Jansen Owens' bill, which died in the Senate, would have allowed that. Any student that's currently in a public school could transfer to any other public school of their wish, where the receiving public school would have to approve it based on certain parameters and constraints, mainly capacity. But the homeschool couldn't block that, which is the case now. And that legislation died in the Senate. How did you vote on that, and what do you think about that concept?
I think the concept itself is one that could work. I voted against it because I don't think that we put enough effort in it. I think Representative Owens' approach was a good one. I think where he starts and where he wants to finish is right. And he took care of the main concern I had, was that you may want to transfer to a better school district, but that better school district can always tell you no. And he provided some rules. He put some rules in place so that would be sort of more of an open market and you could keep moving. But I think that we need more work on it because, you know, you gotta, everybody can't transfer. So what happens to the school district they're leaving? And so we got to figure out how to have the backup plan. But I think that we're kind of headed that way. And I appreciate the fact that he put some effort into the bill and made it much better than it was a couple of years ago. And so I think we just need to continue to work on it.
Okay. I'm assuming you voted against that, right? I'm looking at the vote right here. It looks like you did.
Yeah, I see. I voted against it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's turn our attention.
And look, let me say,
yeah, go ahead.
Let me say, as I've said to the chairman of education, I'm not against consolidation. I'm not against portability. I'm not against it, you know, by itself. But can we, you know, everything that's that transformative, let's spend a little bit more time with it. Let's get it right. That's my only objection.
I see. Let's turn our attention to tax reform. You know, that's the speaker's priority, HB1, as it is labeled, major tax reform bill that ultimately eliminates the income tax in the state of Mississippi. The Senate has a different version. Looks like they may be talking about it, leadership is, to see if they can come up with something that would pass both houses. Where do you stand on that?
I would disagree with you that is tax reform. That's what we're doing. I think we're just making tax cuts. I think real tax reform will involve economists and experts to sit down, because I do think we need tax reform. I think part of that equation needs to be major income tax cuts. But you have to, you know, every study I've ever seen on tax reform tries to achieve revenue neutrality, in the sense that if you're going to cut income tax, you got to find some way to fill in those gaps. We didn't do that. We're looking at a $2 billion cut to our budget, and we're not making allowances for how we're going to take care of that. And when I asked the question, the chairman of Ways and Means said, we're going to take care of it and growth is going to take care of it. Growth in what? I mean, you decided not to collect a 30% of your taxes, you decided not to collect them. And so where are you going to fill in those gaps? Now, I will tell you, I've looked at tax reform, and back in 2008, Governor Barbour had a real tax study and real tax reform outcomes. And what he came out of that with is that, yeah, we can do this, but there are, you know, tax exemptions that money we're giving away, and we've been giving them away for years, and some of which we don't need to give away anymore. There are tax allowances that we don't need. People don't need them anymore. So let's try to recoup some of that to fill in those gaps and have some revenue neutral type tax cuts. And that would work. Everywhere you just have a blanket income tax cut or a blanket grocery tax cut or any blanket cut in any state that you've seen them do that, it has been a complete failure.
We got a break right here. Representative Johnson, sorry to interrupt you. Can you hang around with us to keep talking?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we got Representative Robert Johnson in the Element Well studio on the line. Stay with us.
Madison.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
We're back with you in the Element Well studio. Representative Robert Johnson, minority leader in the Mississippi House, is our guest. So, Representative Johnson, before we went to break, we were talking about taxes, and you said that you thought it was inappropriate, I guess, to refer to HB1 as tax reform. It was more tax cuts, I think. Don't want to put words in your mouth, is the way you described it. So, but you said something that caught my attention. You were calling for the elimination of, you used the word exemptions. What are you talking about exactly there, sir?
So, you know, there are certain industries and businesses and individuals, for that matter. I can't name them all now, but we have over $1 billion in taxes that we don't collect, that we give people tax cuts on. We did some more of them this year. We did it on farm equipment that's on the showroom floor. We already give farmers a break on sales tax when they buy machinery. And there's a whole list of things, automobile dealers.
Right.
There's a whole list of things. And they were all done in an effort to try to boost the economy, boost manufacturing in some cases, agricultural production, give people an incentive to do more if you collected less tax. And some of them have been around 20 and 25 years. And so, there are people who don't pay the same sales tax that you pay when you buy products. There are people who, in their businesses, they don't pay the same rate of income tax that you pay. And so, and some of those things have existed and arguably are not necessary anymore. So, and I'm that we did that in 2008. I signed on to a tax cut bill. It was still wasn't real affirming. 2022, when we did a bill that was revenue neutral, and we recoup some of those exemptions. And the people who were getting them, some of them start jumping up and objecting to it. And by the time we finished, we ended up with a tax cut, not tax reform, but a tax cut over $500 million a year, with no recoupment of any of those taxes that we don't collect.
So then,
I would just suggest that, we do a lot of things in the legislature, like education is doing consolidation and school choice, but no real consulting with the department. Why do we have a Department of Education if we don't rely on the experts? Why are we doing tax reform if we don't put the state economists at the table and say, how will this affect us going forward, and is this a good idea? And I would, they don't say it publicly, but every economic expert that I've talked to said, this is a bad idea.
Okay. So is it your position then that we should end the special sales tax rates for these various industries? You pointed out farming, logging, manufactured housing, vehicles. Should all of those goods be taxed at the same standard state 7% sales tax rate?
No, I think we should look at it. We looked at it before. We said, look, well, we don't cut them all the way out. Maybe we just take a portion of it back. This is how much money we can recoup. And so I think you sit down, look at the state of that particular industry. No, some of those industries we need to maintain those levels, but some of them we don't. And we should have people who are experts and have those people at the table and say, what can you stand? What can we do? Because we have to do something. And that, I don't think you solve that problem by just looking at government and say, we're going to cut. We always say we're going to make smaller government. But every time we say we're going to make government smaller, we just do away with an agency, or we cut a bunch of jobs, and then we turn around and contract that same duty out to some private entity, and we're still spending the same amount of money. So why don't we just sit down and put all these things on a spreadsheet and look at where we can fill the gaps and where we can afford the cuts?
The state auditor has actually suggested abolishing the State Department of Education. What do you think about that?
I don't agree with that. I think we should. Far be it from me, and I know I will regret this, the agreeing with the auditor, but the auditor taking the step to look at where we can be more efficient is something that we should do as a legislature. I don't agree with everything that he said, but at least he made the effort. But I think we could stand to do some of that. And but eliminating the Department of Education, I think that was just. That sound that when I look at what he talked about doing with that, it just sounds more political than anything else.
I see.
But we need a Department of Education.
I see.
So let's see what we're going to get them to do. I think that is worth looking at.
Would you support reducing or eliminating the sales tax on groceries?
As a Democrat, people were saying, don't you support eliminating? I mean, if we're going to eliminate a tax, the sales tax on grocery is the most equitable and fair thing we can do. But we have set up a system. That's what I mean by tax reform, where cities rely on that sales tax that they collect to sort of take care of all the needs that different municipalities have. If we're going to eliminate the sales tax on groceries, we need to figure out how to make cities whole. You just can't just wipe it out and you got to figure out how to redo your system.
Have you given any thought to what we should do about the public employees' retirement systems, really financial headwinds it's facing?
Yeah, let's rehire those over 2,000 state employees that we just cut because it sounded good politically. We don't have enough. And look, and again, I would venture to say 70-80% of those people are doing the same work they were doing for the state. They're just doing it for somebody that we're contracting with, like child support services. I mean, when you have more people taking money out of the system than you have paying into the system, it's going to lose money. The first thing I would do is to see how we can reinvigorate the hiring of state employees, getting people. There's not a waste to have people delivering services to the people we represent. We it may take looking at it and see how we can do more things more efficiently, But we need those people working and paying into the system if we're going to have a retirement system. And then the state needs to look at, I mean, you keep talking about, we cut $500 million out of the budget in on tax reform. We're talking about cutting another $2.2 billion in HB1. Well, if you want to know what to do about the retirement system, then maybe you're not in a position to cut $2.2 billion out of the budget. Maybe you need to figure out how to make sure that you're in a position to fortify those services that are important to the people you represent. But yeah, the first thing I would do is make sure we stop getting rid of employees that are paying into the system.
In the state auditor's report, just talking about cutting government spending, something I've been talking about for 25 years is the procurement practices in the state of Mississippi, the procurement policies and standards. And the third party that the auditor hired essentially recommended consolidation of much of the procurement function to achieve economies of scale, which would be the primary purpose of that, and just some efficiencies in procurement, which means that agencies would lose autonomy to a great extent in their procurement. You have any thoughts about that?
I think this is one thing in that report that I think we should look closely at. I mean, not only would it, they lose autonomy, but you'd also, but in the alternative, what you'd end up with is a more uniform system and less patronage in terms of, you know, people being able to inject their influence into an agency and who gets a contract, and you end up wasting money or spending too much money, which is what we had with DHS. Think about it, we had a real procurement contract, how much fraud and abuse we could avoid.
Yeah.
So I'm not necessarily agreeing with everything that they said or how to do it, but the procurement process, it is a little bit of a joke.
You're probably aware that there are some public sector entities in the state, City of Jackson, probably the biggest one, that actually grants preferential treatment in its procurement based on minority business enterprise status. And the taxpayers end up in many times paying a premium for a vendor that includes a certain level of minority participation. Do you think that's good policy?
I think minority participation, look, I'm not backing away from the fact I believe diversity and involvement is important. And I think the way that minority institutions and businesses have been treated in the past, that there's a certain level of priority you need to get to them. Now, I don't think that you should hire somebody just because they're a minority. Look, in any entity that you need work, there are minority businesses out there that are just as good as anybody else. That's who you should have. The problem with the city of Jackson is not that they were forcing people to have minority participation. They were forcing people to have minority participation, and those minorities had to be their friends. And they would overlook people who were better qualified, better equipped. Look, I watched people. I watched when Nissan came in. There were trucking contracts, and they tried to hire minority truckers. They gave contracts to people who didn't even own truck when there were minority contractors out there who actually had a trucking company, but they were not connected politically. That's the problem. The problem is not minority participation. The problem is political patronage, and that's what we need to get away from.
Gotcha.
That's what we need to do.
Representative Robert Johnson, he's the minority leader in the Mississippi House of Representatives, has been our guest. Really appreciate you coming on, Representative Johnson. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.
Have a great day.
We're coming right back in the Element Well studio.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays from the Element Well studio. What a great tune that is. Supertramp, Breakfast in America, the album. what was that, 77, 78, something like that? Back when music was really music. Some may argue that.
Released March 16th, 1979.
Dang, missed it by a year. Shoot. The NASDAQ is now down 629 points. I just checked my personally managed account. I've set a record today. Biggest loss in history on this single day in my personally managed account. That means I'm not personally managing it very well, I guess. It's because it's mostly deals with high-tech stocks. It's where I don't let the wealth managers do that. It's too volatile. But just looking at where we stand and some of those issues, it ain't a pretty sight, as they would say.
Funny money's back down south of 80.
Yeah, I think it's going further down. Apple getting beat up today. It's down $13. Jeez. AMD way down. Amazon way down. Let's see. There was another. Meta. Good gosh. Meta's down 5%, $32 today. Microsoft down as well, 3%, $12. NVIDIA down 4%, $5. Palo Alto, 3.2%, $6. Palantir, just looking at my holdings there. So a lot of red on the screen today. Again, I'm hoping that we get a breakthrough on the tax deal and tariffs. And I do think investors will breathe a sigh of relief and jump back in. There's still a bunch of cash out there, very liquid throughout the investment community, and a lot of money just by individual investors on the sidelines looking for the right time to jump back in. And I think that will be signaled when we get something on tariffs and tax cuts. Once again, we run out of money on Friday, and there is a continuing resolution, by the way, which the president supports. Now, Rhino, you've seen this. Many of our audience strenuously oppose that method of financing the government. And there are a number of hardliners in the House in particular that also oppose that, just kick the can down the road, keep the spending right where it is sort of deal, knowing that, okay, well, you're not making any progress towards trimming deficits when you're doing that. And that's inflationary and adding to the debt, of course. But the president has said, hey, go along with this. Give us some time to work through a bona fide budget. Go along with this through the end of the fiscal year, which would be September 30th. So once again, another year without regular order of passing budget bills. Just keep everything the same. It's where we are. The budget resolution, however, that has passed the House, they're still hammering out the details, trying to get something finalized to transmit over to the Senate. I'm not sure what that procession looks like. Does it resemble the one in the Mississippi Capitol?
Oh, they got a lot bigger budget, like jetpacks and all kind of stuff.
Well, that's because they can just print money to do it. Which, of course, we don't actually print money. It's digital levers, just so you'll know. Oh, my gosh. But it's not a pretty sight. As far as the beep, guys, yeah, it sounded like a fire alarm, smoke detector beep, I should say.
That was one of them, yeah.
That wasn't coming from the studio. That apparently in Representative Johnson's office, he's got a battery going dead. But there was an alert you may have heard that went off four or five times. And best I could tell, it was about a door being open. There's an audible.
Yeah, it's a home security.
Okay, telling you when a door's open. Yeah. So, and I'm not sure if that was his personal one. I don't think he's got a speaker or some sort of alert set up on his computer or his phone for a door in the Capitol. I don't think they have, or his office. But a review of Representative Johnson's comments. And a lot to unpack there, guys. And someone said, said, I don't agree. Yeah, Randy in Starkville. I don't agree with Mr. Johnson, but he is very likable. Wish he was a Republican. Please have him on again. He comes on at least once or twice a session, I would say, Rhino. And you're right. He's an excellent guest. He doesn't shy away from the questions. And he is very likable. I've known him personally for a while as well. I think he's a great leader for his party. We don't necessarily align on public policy, and that's fine. But here's what came to mind, Rhino, when I was listening to him and his responses to many of the questions, is that, you know this, there are a lot of folks on the right who thrive more on blasting Republicans than they do Democrats. Would you say that there's a group, a sect of that? And even the worst Republicans, from a policy perspective, I submit, are better than the Democrats from a policy perspective. When the Republicans are at their worst on policy and the Democrats are at their best, I'd say the Republicans are still better. So one of the things I got, just kind of taking a note or two here, was him talking about the various sales tax carve-outs, the special sales tax rates, and there are a number of them. You and I looked it up one day. It's a fairly long list of goods that are subject and services to a lower sales tax rate than the standard 7%. The ones that most people are familiar with, vehicles, manufactured housing, farm implements. You remember the bill in 2022 that Philip Gunn, the Speaker of the House at the time, champion, would have increased the sales tax on all these various goods that are subject to a lower rate right now, such as farm implements and so forth, vehicles. And those folks that are in those industries really objected very strongly to that. And the reason he proposed that was to eliminate the income tax in a very short period of time, because the state would offset that somewhat from consumption taxes. And it's widely held. I struggle to understand why so many who profess to be such hardcore conservatives don't seem to accept and recognize and align with a legacy, traditional view of taxation from conservative philosophers that, and economists, that it's better and more efficient to tax consumption than income. That taxing income is punishment on work. But yet, when you talk about raising the sales tax as a way to fund government and get out of the mode of funding government with income taxes, man, they get pretty upset about it, especially the retired people in our state, because they don't presently pay income taxes. So you can't cut income taxes for people that don't pay any. But he talked about these exemptions, but I couldn't get any specifics. You know, I would say that he kind of handled that rather lightly, didn't really get specifics. And so I'm not sure, but I suspect that's what he means. And he did seem to indicate, yeah, we ought to look at perhaps increasing that, maybe not leveling those with the current general sales tax of 7%, but increasing that to produce more revenue. And I'm not sure if he then on that basis would say, okay, if we get more revenue from that, we can cut income taxes. Couldn't really get a clean understanding there. Education, I think, like most Democrats, he believes more money is needed. I don't. I think the money is sufficient. He's right in that school districts are funded by a combination of state money and local money. And the more affluent a district, the more local money they have to pour into their schools. That's the way it works. And it is true that the revamping of the education funding formula, honestly, what it meant was that the more affluent districts ended up with less money, and the poorer districts ended up with slightly more money. We did talk about procurement, and I'm still a little confused. I have said for a long time that this policy of granting preferential treatment based on race and gender and sexual orientation, ethnicity, nationality, all these various characteristics that are considered disadvantaged, if you will, is bad policy. And that has been the case in the city of Jackson, for example, for as long as I can remember. I've been crusading to pass legislation to ban that. We can't get it across the finish line. He basically said, and I want to make sure I get this right, that it's He said patronage is the word he used. I'm not sure if that's the proper word in that context. It could be, but bottom line is he's right. There's kind of there's an industry built around it where people do position themselves as just plug-ins for minority participation. He's absolutely right. But they don't have any ability to perform the services or deliver the products that are being awarded there. They're just kind of a pass-through, and they skim off the top. Final segment is next. I'm a joker. I'm a
smoker. I'm a midnight joker. Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
We're back with you in the Element Well Studios. Another day where I feel like we need the extra hour with just to break down all the stuff we talked about with Representative Robert Johnson. Also on the C-Spire text line, car dealers do not get a tax break. People buying a car pay 5%. Yeah, we get that. But I can assure you that when there was a proposal to add 1.5% sales tax to everything in the 2022 bill that Speaker of the House Philip Gunn promoted, which he felt was the most rapid approach to eliminating the income tax, and he's right. I can assure you the car dealerships and their association protested mightily because it does increase the price of what they sell, and it's thought that that would curb demand. So while I get it, no retailer pays sales taxes. They just collect them from the consumer and pass it on. The idea is, okay, Mr. Consumer, we're going to give you $10 of income tax break, but every 6 years or 5 years or 6 years when you buy a car, you're going to pay 2% more. Actually, it was 1.5% more, as I recall.
Which, depending on the price of the car, is going to be a couple grand more.
Right. But how much have you saved in income taxes over the period of the life of the vehicle between purchases? So, and it still puts us lower than the neighboring states in that regard. I like how he changed the I to involvement. You can change the word, but you're still drinking the Kool-Aid. Also, I know that Gary and the Berg is passionate about this subject. We are too, as well. Gary, what public schools need are two-parent families. Fatherless homes are a huge problem. Teach conservative values, which include financial literacy. I wouldn't even call that conservative. That's just, I would say that's universal, financial literacy. And I think we do have some, do we not? Some requirements there? I'm not sure, in our curriculum. But there's no doubt that the fatherless home situation is a huge problem in our country. And in our state, it's exacerbated here because last time I checked, we have the largest percentage of children living in fatherless homes. And that is, no doubt, the home and a nurturing, stable, loving home is the key to producing high-quality educational outcomes. No doubt about it. Totally agree. But that's a very sticky subject, as you know, and it's really a sensitive one to even bring up.
Yeah, Mississippi students have to take at least one semester of personal finance.
Okay. And I applaud that. I'm not sure how much that really changes the situation if you're in a dysfunctional home.
There are 12 states to require it for all high school students.
All right. We have focused on education spending on the C-Spire text line. Biggest line item, government schools haven't. The grading level of schools is poorly structured. I completely agree that I have little to no confidence in the grading methodology. I agree with that. I don't know that it fully tells the story, but I don't know that there's anything we could do. I have a friend who has a relative that works in an auto plant in Mexico, said she makes $90 a week, says Kevin in Pontotoc. That sounds a little low, Kevin. I know that the pay is certainly much lower than it is in this country. That sounds a little low. I'd have to research that. But that is the reason that so many American companies move their manufacturing abroad is for the inexpensive, the very cheap labor. Ain't no doubt about it. $90 is crazy for a week, but so are some of the wages that the labor unions negotiate over here. And it's not just the wages, it's all the crazy perks that go along with it, or this demand that you can't automate if that's going to eliminate our jobs. I'd also say this. There's people that say that somebody on our ceasefire text line that, okay, we eliminate these jobs in government, then we just outsource those and contract for them. And that's one of the things that Representative Johnson was talking about, that by reducing our payroll, our official payroll, we're also reducing the amount of money coming into PERS. It's a catch-22. You reduce the headcount in government. You are also, you're reducing expenses in that respect, but you're also reducing the amount of money going into PERS, because third-party contractors performing government jobs aren't paying into the public employees' retirement system. But that, once again, just exposes the flaw in the whole model, that your retirement in a defined benefit plan is based on the people that are currently working paying into it, not what you paid into it, what they're paying into it. Just like Social
Security. $90 a week might not be that bad a deal as far as Mexico auto workers. I'm looking at the average.
Interesting.
Pesos to dollars, looking at a range, depending on the job in the factory, between 180 to 680 pesos a day, which that's anywhere from $9 a day to about $35 a day.
Wow. Interesting. So, and that's why. And cars are still expensive as all get out. Something that I didn't get a chance to dig into in detail today, but credit card fees. What we should do is figure out a way to negotiate lower credit card fees for business, government, I should say, transactions between businesses and individuals, and eliminate a lot of the people that work in various jobs to collect money from taxpayers. Let them pay online. We're out of here today. Back again tomorrow. Until then, stay safe and God bless everyone.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.